We continue our discussion going just a little deeper into variables of birth order. Now, let's say you're a parent or you're guiding parents. Here are some good questions to ask. What is your birth order as a parent? Which child shares the same birth order? In what ways do you tend to over-identify with and favor that child? How will keeping this tendency in mind help you balance your actions and responses to all your children? Now, in my family, you know, after reading all this Kevin Lehman stuff and being truly a last born, you know, I will, in fact, for a conversation, smarter with people, smart thing. If I meet people I don't know, you know, I may say they may ask me a few things, and I might joke about my birth order, and they'll joke about their birth order, and we'll have some conversations. But over time, I probably at times been too proud about my last born birth order because, yeah, I like being fun. I like sort of being the, you know, the center of attention, and I was the last of four. I have three above me, two brothers and a sister, and my sister was good at nurturing me and being a mommy to me and all these other things. So, hey, I really got into that. That was fun. I had a great childhood, fun childhood. By the time I came along, my parents had more resources. You know, I golfed with my father when I was a teenager, and he even had a cart, and my brothers, my older brothers were like shocked, you know, how I have so many things that they didn't get to do and all of these things. So now here comes life, and now I'm having my own family, and I sort of play with that a little bit, and sometimes I go over the top. I'm too proudful. I know I am. And it's just sort of, so that I have a last born. So now this last born, you know, I'll say, oh, okay, you know, she got an iPhone earlier or a cell phone earlier than all the other ones did. And, you know, do I have a little bit of an eye that allows her to get away with more things that the other ones didn't get away with? On the other hand, my wife is a middle child. And, you know, and she sees the excesses of having a last born in her own family growing up. So she sort of watches me that I don't go over the top. And if I do, she sort of lets me know in the bedroom very kindly, like, you know, stop this like last born stuff. And now I bring up this whole conversation about me because that's what Dr. Lehman is getting to. It's like, look, each of you are going to parent, if you're a parent, sort of out of the perspective of your own birth order. It's a variable. Does a critical parent live in your house? Now, there's a good example of that. So maybe someone was critical, they were raised in a critical family, and now they're maybe an oldest child, and they're very critical. You know, here are some of the signs to watch for. Your child procrastinates at everything she does. Your child draws a picture, tears it up, telling you it's no good. Your child redoes his homework several times. A simple half-hour homework assignment takes 4 hours. Nothing is ever good enough. You redo projects your child does. For example, you make the bed he has already made. Now, there's another example of the parenting side. Maybe you as a parent are very critical, and that's going to create a variable in the whole birth order understanding as well, because now a critical parent sort of might trump some of the normal firstborn, secondborn, thirdborn types of things. Dr. Lehman points out this one thing that I think is very interesting. But suppose the father has a critical eye and is very demanding and exacting. There is a good chance he could destroy his firstborn daughter, and his son will become the true firstborn, the favored firstborn in the family. Firstborn girls who grow up under a very perfectionistic, critical father are often hard on themselves and put themselves in situations that aren't healthy as they look for love, affirmation, acceptance that they did not get from their own father. When such a firstborn daughter grows up and marries, her husband will pay the price for the sins of her father. So again, here is a variable. If parents are out of balance, it will affect how children are raised. Here's another variable that happens at the parent side. You know, let's say there's a divorce or something like that occurs. Now families are blended together. This is a definite parent-induced variable. Handling firstborns, middleborns, and lastborns in one family is challenging enough. But bring two families together into a Brady Bunch of eight is complicated in a hurry. Those classic shows, which still appear as reruns, like the Brady Bunch, create a plastic package where crisis and problems are always solved neatly and easily as everyone blends into a happy ever family. But in truth, it takes a lot of work, planning, talking, give and take in a blended family. In other words, a lot of self-aware conversations need to occur. Here's some blended family wisdom. One, don't assume there will be instant love among all members of the new family. Sibling rivalry goes back to Cain and Abel, and even more likely in a blended family, especially if the children are close in age and thus competing with each other. So set the ground rules that it's okay to disagree, but it always must be done with respect for each person in the family so that no one feels stepped on. Number two, don't assume it will be easier to have a blended family with a spouse and five children than it is to have a single parent of two. That's interesting. If you are not yet remarried, ask yourself the question, have we fallen in love or have we fallen in need? It's typical for people who have divorced or lost spouses in another way to say to each other, you have two kids, I have two, so why don't we get married? It'll be easier for all of us. Sure, it may be easier financially with both of you living in one house. That's understandable with one mortgage. But emotionally and relationally, will it be easier? Acquiring instant children can mean acquiring instant problems. Number 3A. Mom and dad can stand shoulder to shoulder, united as parents, in order for the marriage and blended family to survive. There must be complete unanimity among and united as parents for it to really work. Think of it this way. Most couples date for 2 years before they decide to retie the knot. The relationship each of those spouses have had their own respective children is usually much longer. It is reasonable to believe that a two-year relationship between a husband and wife who have remarried is going to outweigh parent-child relationships that have existed for several years at least, and in some cases 10 to 15 years. So is it even reasonable to believe that, is what Dr. Kevin Lehman is saying, is that these deep relationships that happened before this new marriage are long and structured, and now in many cases where there's a divorce, there has been other factors, and there is now, in a sense, when a family breaks up and remarries, and then let's say the children, their parent that's not in this union, they marry someone else. What you have is all sorts of new dynamics that come into play. And these are conversations that must be dealt with. To paraphrase the old saying, blood in biological families is thicker than the punch served at a remarriage reception. Whoa, I'm going to say that again. Blood in biological families is thicker than the punch served at remarriage receptions. Where there is a fight in the family, it usually becomes the mom and her kids against the dad and his kids. In that kind of warfare, the probability that a marriage will survive, honestly, without Christ especially, is very low. But if you and your spouse decide that you're going to stand together on all issues, and I'm going to add the walking with the Lord, no matter what, that means keeping any disagreement between the two of you when you're away from the children's hearing and working on quietly between the two of you, no matter what, that you and your children will always be in our family, you're giving yourself the best chance of success. To have a blended family is very difficult. Blended family self-awareness. Another way the two oldest males may lock up horns is if the mother's firstborn happens to be a neat freak and keeps his room clean. and such has been known to happen. And he winds up having to share a room with his 16-year-old stepbrother, who is not concerned about neatness, and the true firstborn style doesn't like surprises. What happens when the neat stepbrother decides he's had enough of the sloppy room, cleans up the place, and puts a few things away? In one word, Dr. Lehman says, Armageddon. So these are all important issues, especially as you are exerting care and encouraging people. So the key to the blended family birth order game is this. When a child who is born in one birth order lands on another limb in the blended family tree, do not treat that child as something he is not. He may have to take on different responsibilities and play different roles at times, but never push or force him. Never forget who he really is. In other words, if you have two firstborns, make sure they both get a firstborn stage so that they're not fighting, and be very self-aware about this. Here's some family meeting rules. And the reason Dr. Lehman brings this up is if you've got a blended family, and in fact, this applies for every family, there will be conversations and you're going to need some family meetings. One, each member of the group has an equal say. Two, one person talks at a time. Three, no one interrupts until the person's talking is done. Four, the atmosphere of the meeting must be one of mutual respect for all. Five, if heated conflict arrives in the meeting, to give everyone time to go to their own areas, cool off. But before everyone leaves, set another meeting time in the near future, within a day, to come back and discuss the issue. If you have a blended family especially, you're going to need family meetings. It might even be a good thing to just say every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, we're going to have a family meeting and talk about our progress and get together more as a team. Here are some helpful tools. Part of the bigger picture birth order isn't a cookie cutter process that ensures that firstborns will all march lockstep this way, middle children will universally do something different, and lastborns will be the family comedians. Instead, birth order is designed to give you clues about what an individual is like and what their thought process and feelings are. So as you think about this, remember the word clues, that essentially you're in life, you're helping people in your life, and you're looking at every advantage in the conversations to bring health and healing. And what is so frustrating to just knock yourself against the wall and not have insights on how to change things so they will be sustainable changes for relational health. You know, this birth order stuff is not a silver bullet, but you will find it helpful. So as you study birth order, I would recommend that you buy, if you have the means to do it and the book is available in your region, I recommend, and if you've never read Dr. Kevin Lehman's book, I would recommend that you buy this one. I could not cover so much that he wrote about. It's a very good-sized book. It's an excellent book to read. I would recommend that you buy that and study it in more detail and do an analysis in your own home if you have a family at home, or even if you're older and your family is away and they have their own children. This is a great conversation starter to try to help bring more and more health to your families. And it will also help you as a leader of others in bringing health to their families as well.